Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Thursday, March 21st. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Ali Donnelly previews the Women's Six Nations. Premier League Darts takes place in Dublin tonight, so Michael Glennon will have the latest on the Luke Littler bandwagon. Rebecca Cray chats League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action and will be speaking to the first Irishman to secure a full scholarship to play American college football, Kerry's David Shanahan. We'll also hear from Ireland's Nathan Collins and Jake O'Brien ahead of Saturday's friendly against Belgium in the Aviva. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to Game On. It is great to have your company on this Thursday evening. A couple of news headlines before we get into this evening's show. A record €17.3 million of core funding in sport is to be invested in 2024, an increase of €1.3 million on last year. The money allocated, by government will be distributed via Sport Ireland to 58 national governing bodies. A further €11.4 million to be allocated to 29 local sports partnerships. In football, the current Waterford and Republic of Ireland under 21 assistant manager Alan Reynolds appears set to replace the recently departed Declan Devine as the new manager of Bohemian Football Club. The move would see him reunite with director of football Pat Fenlon, under whom he previously worked as manager at Waterford. He also won a league medal as a player under Fenlon at Shelburne. The appointment is likely to be confirmed after the Republic of Ireland's European Under 21 Championship qualifier against San Marino tomorrow evening. Finally, in snooker, Ronnie O'Sullivan has been knocked out of snooker's ranking World Open in China. He's been beaten by 5-4 by Hossein Fafai. In the last 16, defending champion Judge Trump has reached the quarterfinals, beating David Lilly 5-3. Lots to get through. Rebecca Cray standing by to chat soccer. However, before we chat to Rebecca, we are going to cross live to the Three Arena because RTE Sports' Michael Glennon is at the Premier League Darts. Michael, what's the atmosphere like at this early stage?
Shane, how are you doing? It's actually quite as a mouse in here, quite as a mouse. The crowd are just coming in, so the venue is empty at the moment. They're just filling in. Wayne Mardle is up on stage there with Mark Webster there preparing. Everyone's knocking around backstage. And yeah, no, good atmosphere on the way in. I saw Super Liverpool fan Dara on the way in. He loves the darts as well. So there's great atmosphere building up here outside the darts.
Ah, brilliant. Brilliant. That is brilliant. And it is going to be packed soon enough as well.
Say that again, Shane.
It's going to be packed soon enough. The action gets underway at 7pm. Obviously, a lot of people there to see teenage sensation Luke Littler, who has been, he's been going well since Ali Pally, it's fair to say, hasn't he?
Absolutely. He's a Bahrain darts master. He won a floor tournament and he won the best darts open tier. He hit 3 9 darters along the way.
He seems to have lost Michael Glennon, which is unfortunate. The atmosphere, and maybe it's taken him over. Rebecca Cray, are you a darts fan?
I'm not at all.
No?
Okay. Bad aim.
You know, a lot of footballers, when they're killing time, it's always snooker, it's always pool, it's always darts. You weren't
one
of them
when
you're
playing? I'm not bad at pool now, I won't lie. I'm not bad at pool, okay. But darts just wasn't up there.
Okay. Well, listen, it is, for many footballers, it is something to pass the time. However, we don't have to pass the time here, Rebecca, because Michael Glennon joins us once again from the Tree Arena. And you were picking up Luke Littler.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that it's a surprise to many that he hasn't actually won a Premier League night so far. He's third in the table. So he's been getting to, he got to one final and he's been in 5 semi-finals. He just hasn't managed to get over the line, but still playing some incredible darts. And that's the funny thing about this Premier League. All bar Peter Wright, and he's had his moments, but everyone else has been playing up at a really high standard. So the likes of Gerwyn Price, who's not featuring in the top, has been beaten with huge averages, over 110 averages. He's been beaten a handful of times. So the standard, once again, is off the charts. It seems to keep getting better. I mean, I know there's a limit to these guys' talents, but they appear to be getting better all the time.
And it's great to have an event in Ireland as well, because obviously the City West was a venue for a couple of Grand Prix before the COVID pandemic, and then City West wasn't available. Might we see more competitions, more big name competitions in Dublin?
Yeah, well, that's the plan, because I was talking to Matt Porter, who's the PDC chief executive, yesterday, just ahead of this. And, you know, that's always a question I'm keen to ask, because I know that the players and the families of players used to love coming over here for the City West event, the Grand Prix. He says he was only in Ireland a couple of weeks ago talking to people, trying to sort out a venue. He said City West is not going to become available in the near future, and Ireland, it doesn't have a great variety of venues that would suit a multi-day event, but he's working on it, and it's a stated goal of the PDC to get a Grand Prix or a multi-day event back here in Ireland, and we'd welcome that, of course.
We most certainly would. Listen, I mentioned in the intro, a bit tongue-in-cheek, the Luke Littler bandwagon rolls into town.
Yeah.
There has been so much emphasis on Luke, and darts in general is growing. Are we seeing a rise in participation level in Ireland?
Oh, absolutely. And like, even RTE, where Gail Conway, the Midlands correspondent, was down at the Edenderry Darts Youth Academy, and they started from nothing, and there were 60 kids coming every Tuesday night, full of enthusiasm, dying to get on the board. And that's been replicated all over the country. So that's happening in Cork, in Carlow, in Dublin. The shops are reporting they can't keep the stock in. The dart boards are flying out the door, as well as the darts. The dart boards are flying out the door. And it's the JDC, which is Junior Darts Academy, have over in England anyway, registrations up 30% across their membership. So this Luke Littler phenomenon has taken off, and it's huge for the sport.
Well, listen, it's not only about Luke Littler this evening. He faces Michael Smith in the quarterfinals, but there's some other big names in action this evening. So what are you most looking forward to seeing, Michael?
Well, everyone would be a big fan of Luke Humphreys. So, like, he's the number one for a reason, and he's the world champion for a reason as well. And he's won the last two nights as well, and he's won them very well, playing close to his best of what. As close to his best as he can get. And I can't just wait. It'll be my first time to see Luke Humphreys live. And actually, he was talking last week. He's from Leeds, but he has Irish roots as well. So he's looking forward to playing in front of a second home crowd, he called it.
Oh, brilliant. Do you reckon he's going to go all the way then this evening?
This evening, yeah. And if he did, he'd make it three in a row, which has only been done by Michael Van Gerwen and Michael Smith before. But yeah, I mean, he'd think he's hot favourite to go and make it three in a row tonight. But Luke Humphreys would obviously love to get number one on the board.
Absolutely. Okay, for now, Michael, I'll let you enjoy the evening of darts at the Tray Arena atmosphere building as we speak. Michael Glennon there from RT Sport. We're taking a short break, but Rebecca Cray is still here at the chat football, and we'll also hear from Jake O'Brien and Nathan Collins ahead of Ireland versus Belgium.
Game on. Football.
Now, the first match of John O'Shea's time in charge of the Irish men's national team begins at this weekend, Ireland-Belgium in the Aviva Stadium on Saturday. And we can hear from two Ireland players now. Nathan Collins was speaking to the media, but first, it is Ireland's Jake O'Brien on his time at Lyon.
Yeah, so it was obviously start of the season, it was very tough. We didn't get many wins, and it was just back and forth, really. And I think just since the break of Christmas, we've kind of turned things around. We've gotten wins, and I think it's a more positive atmosphere around the club now. So I think for now it's just about looking off the table and getting far up as we can. And obviously the cup as well, so it'd be good to win that. I think in the end, there's pressure as a club because the fans can be on you, but I think they have the right to because of the size of the club it is. But I think that if you're a young player, that's what you have to do. You have to go in and try to win games. It's not about developing anymore, it's about the winning game, and especially for Lyon, they're used to winning. So obviously this season hasn't been the best, but I think we've turned around, and since Christmas it's been a lot more positive.
And tell me, life in France, I mean, how's your French come on? Are you enjoying the cuisine?
Yeah, no, it's a lovely city. I think there's no better place in France to live. In terms of learning the language, it's slowly coming on. I don't understand a lot, but it's obviously a lot more difficult to speak it, but I think in time it'll come in.
Hi Nathan, have you met Brian Kerr before this weekend?
Me personally, no, but I think every other member of my family probably has.
And how have you found him?
He's really funny, a good lad, you know. He's telling me stories with my granddad, and he's mad, but he's good and really enjoying him.
Yeah, and what do you think he can bring to the party, so to speak? I mean, you're young men, and this is an opportunity, I suppose, to prove yourselves again.
Yeah, for me, I'm just like a sponge. I'm just soaking in everything he says, you know. He's full of information, full of experience, and everything he says, I'm just glued into what he's talking about. So I think something like that, just gaining as much information as possible, and it's a good week for us. I think, you know, we have good staff here, you know, as I said, Brian, but then the other boys that are still coming in, it's exciting really for me.
Shane Duffy out and Liam Scales, so you have a very good chance of starting these games. How important will it be for you personally?
Yeah, I want to play for Ireland, of course. I want to do everything I can for Ireland. I want to captain Ireland. I want to do everything, but we want to win. That's the main thing, you know, one game at a time. If it's a friendly or not, you want to win, and it's a good chance for us on Saturday. They all get a win. It's football at the end of the day. We want to win. Every game is about winning, no matter what it is. So as much as experience for lads, as much as it's good for them to be in the group, at the end of the day, we need to win football games. You know, we've had a lot of setbacks as a team, a lot of injuries, a few ups and downs personally, but I think I've grown again as a player and I've grown as a person, and I'm really enjoying it. From what I've seen now, we're really enjoying it. The lads are buying into it. The lads on the coaches, everything's full on. You know, it's a high tempo. It's a competitive training sessions, and you obviously look at who you're playing. I do the same thing every match. I look at my clips of individual players who I'm playing against, what they like, what they don't. But I think when you get to a certain level now, every player is good. You know what I mean? You can't predict you're going to be better than someone on the day. Every player is good. And they all have their own style of play. So I just have to play my own game, watch them, learn from their clips, and just try to keep them quiet as possible.
So, Rebecca Cray, you looking forward to seeing John O'Shea's Ireland?
I am, yeah. New look. Yeah. Fresh start. Exciting little squad. So, yeah, should be good.
And your neighbour back involved? Senior international football, Brian Kerr?
Brian Kerr, yeah. See him locally in the good Pats tracksuit now and again. Down at the shout out to Eddie's shop in Greenhills. He likes to get his milk there. So, yeah, good to see him back involved in some capacity, yeah.
There's a lot to be said for people that can pull off a Pats tracksuit being involved with men's international
football.
I think
football. It's from 1990.
That would be Brian Kerr, an absolute gentleman. So, yeah, hopefully John O'Shea's Ireland do get off to a good start against Belgium this weekend. But if you were to look back at last weekend, there was a full billing in the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division, Rebecca. And let us begin with, and I'm not just doing this because you were here, but the current champions, PML, defeated by Shelburne 2-0. And Shell's good value for the win.
Yeah, look, it looked like things started to gel a little bit, you know, in the second game. A bit rocky in the first, but yeah, clinical in front of goal this time. Kiva Keenan with the first and Kerry Lettman with it, a cross come shot. Yeah, so she came
did
on.
Did she mean it? Did she meet after?
She's got a claim, no. She is. Noelle Murray.
All footballers do.
Yeah, like to tell her that she must be watching her in training. But yeah, look, great, obviously, win against the current champions who, look, They looked a bit kind of bare bones, you know. They only, I think, they made one substitution that was forced through injury to Erica Burke in the first half. But yeah, look, it's a case of, I don't know where Saif Dial was. I don't know if it's studying or you know, injury has kept her away as well from playing. But yeah, it was a case of, I think, Karen Duggan covered every blade of grass as she usually
standard.
Does. Yeah,
standard.
But it looks like she was kind of holding things together, you know. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they go on now.
Is there a concern? A lack of depth at Piemont?
Looking at them, and not just saying it because I'm part of the Shells setup, but to me it looked like there was slightly a lack of depth there.
Because they have been bringing through a lot of exceptional young players.
And they all played, you know. Yeah. They had Ellen Dolan in there, Jess Fitzgerald, you know, great players, and they do have a great starting team there. But, you know, those dying minutes of the game, you know, the last 15 or so, you're looking, you know, what's going to happen, someone to change a game, especially when you're losing. It just didn't seem to be the case that was there maybe in previous years, you know. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they fare in the next few games.
So, victory for Shells after they were frustrated in Tolka Park against Sligo in the opening round. They're second in the table behind Galway, because Galway are 6 points, 7 goals scored over the first 2 matches. They beat Cork 5-0 at home at the weekend. They're in cracking form.
Amazing, yeah, team to be. You know, I think we've been raving, or I know I have been raving about Galway for a number of years. Mm. You know, over the last 7 years or so, they've been that team that have just been an absolute nightmare to play against, especially down there. Beat Cork 5-0. Julianne Russell, I was raving about her last week as well.
Just a hat-trick. You teed it up well, Becca.
Do you know what
you
I mean?
That's like, why we bring you in.
Fantastic, you know, for her. And obviously, Jenna Slattery getting the other two. They seem to be two powerhouses. I think Lindsay McKee kind of held things together for them down there for a long time. But it's fantastic to see Julianne, you know, coming up to 33. A mother as well is still flying around and you know, looking as sharp as ever. Same with Jenna Slattery, a young talent coming through, and she done really well for them last year, but she seems to be building on that again this season.
And just before we came on air, Galway United announced the signing of Mary Kate Tyrrell.
That's right.
Who was with the Underdogs, who would have played against Galway
Yeah, played for Castlebar Town, our local club, and obviously played against Galway in the recent underdogs campaign that was on, and obviously has impressed, you know. So, yeah, good to see them bringing some more bodies on board.
It's good to see some players from the underdogs. I know Bowes signed a player from the underdogs.
Clare Smith, that's right.
Yeah, so it is good to see that players are developing and they're getting their chances as a result. So Galway, the team to beat, current Avenir All-Ireland Cup champions, which we will get to because that is on this weekend as well. But Treaty United, we were intrigued to see how they would fare this season. Listen, they played one match, they were idle on week one, but Dominic Foley's Treaty United, 2-0 winners at home to Deal Or Waves.
Yeah, great to see, and I was saying to you off air, it's their first home win since June 2021.
Wow.
which is huge, you know. It's a big step, but to beat DLR 2-0 with a new kind of change down there with Dominic coming on board, and obviously the likes of Ciara McCormack and Mary Curtin building, you know, down in Limerick, they've been doing great things. So to see it happening on the pitch for them now, albeit just the first game, is great to see.
Mm. I know our producer Ronan was raving about the crowds at Treaty United as well, which it is great to see, because there's increase in the men's crowd, and as you mentioned, Ciara, and we've talked about it on the show, but it's what's needed, that geographical spread of football.
Just a bit of heart, you know, someone that wants to build the league and you know, a bit of passion, and people that know where it's been and where it needs to go. So yeah, look, the girls are doing great things down there. So I'll be excited to see how Treaty do in the next few games as well.
Shamrock Rovers 1-1 at home to Wexford United's. Rovers, they need a late penalty in week one to rescue a draw against Deal Or Waves as well. Will they be frustrated, or? Listen, it's 2 weeks into the league season. They're not going
to
be much.
It's hard to call for anyone. You know, we can rave about this team and that team. You can all put down other teams, but yeah, look, it's kind of one of them. It's been mediocre for them, you could say. You know,
that's because of the high standards that they set
exactly
for themselves.
Yeah, so. And like the league, as I said, and I know it's cliche, it's getting better year on year, and it's as wide open as ever. You know, Wexford as well. Don't look like the Wexford of old that we've always kind of known. Kylie Murphy again, you know, was there to score the goal for them. They were winning, just couldn't hold out, and Scarla Heron brought it back for a draw for Rovers. I know Rovers are without Amanda Budden at the minute in goals. Summer Lawless is standing in for her. So look, it might be just a case of finding their feet over the next few games. It's a long season, as we know, and obviously now coming into this weekend with the Avenir All-Ireland Cup starting as well.
Rovers again scoring to kind of rescue the draw or salvage a draw, whatever phrase you want to call it. So you can see that the experience is still there amongst that group, that they're like, able to still manage games well.
Definitely. Like, obviously it is a reactive, you know, result for them, but they still have got that, you know, level of experience to claw it back. And obviously Stephanie Zambra is there, and Anya O'Gorman still you know, trudging on. But look, they still have it there. You can't underestimate anybody across this league.
Athlone, 1-0 winners away to Bowes in Dalymount Park. How disappointed will Bowes be? How pleased will Athlone be?
Yeah, look, I'm sure after the first week, Bowes were flying high. You know, Ken maybe coming in looking and thinking he was cruising. But look, Athlone brought them down and back down to earth, I think, with Chloe Singleton. Clinical in front of goal as always, you know. She seemed to nip in between the defenders to get that goal, and they'd be happy, especially after their first week as well. So look, good result for Athlone, but it's wide open now, you know. You can't call it, and you just have to look at the table with Galway on top with 6 points, you know, Shelburne in there at 4, and then you've about 4 other teams on 3 points, you know, and then a few on one on two and the rest on one. But Cork City sadly still to get a point. Hopefully it won't be the same as last year for them.
Yeah, now hopefully Cork can push on, but as you mentioned, it is only week two. Everyone's played 2 matches, bar Treaty and Sligo, who've played 1 match each. Given the amount of teams in the league, that there is going to be a team idle at the moment. Break this week for the All-Ireland Cup, and then in terms of league fixtures on the 30th of March, Bowes host Cork, Rovers host Treaty, Piemont host Wexford, Sligo host Galway, and Shales are on the road to Lizzie Wollan to play Athlone Town. However, the All-Ireland Cup is on this weekend, Rebecca. It was brought in to bridge that gap last year with the World Cup, so it was wholly welcomed. It was a success, to be fair.
Yeah.
Is it as much welcomed this year, or is it a bit of a distraction? Is it a bit of a stutter in your league?
I don't think it's a stutter. No, I think it's just integrated now. You know, we look at the fixture list when it comes out and can see the fixtures set up there. Mm. And, you know, the girls are looking forward to it. It's something different as well. You know, obviously travelling up to Belfast to play against teams that you maybe never really would have previously. You know, we play pre-season games here and there, and I know Raheny and Shells back in the day, you would have played, you know, Champions League games when you're unlucky to be drawn up in Belfast, you thought you were going forward to a field. But yeah, look, I think it's great for our league and their league, you know, given that they don't have as many teams in their league up north and maybe not of the same quality. You know, you've got your Glentorans, your Linfields, Cliftonville Crusaders, who are kind of the four main teams up there who would be competing over the course of the last few years that they've been in existence. But it's interesting to see, you know, how we fare against each other as well, you know, how the kind of the teams compare.
How big a gap is there between the leagues, would you say? I know numerically it's different, but yeah, in terms of the standard of play between the top teams in each league.
Yeah, like it's hard to call. I know Glentoran are the current league champions up there. They'd be pretty good. Or Linfield, and you know, they'd be quite decent. Mm. They'd be quite up there. Would be very tough. A lot of, you know, underage Northern Ireland internationals as well, and senior Northern Ireland internationals throughout those teams. Crusaders have kind of fallen away a little bit. They would have been the top team and would have always qualified for Champions League up there. But look, it's going to be very competitive. It'd be good to see how Pease and Linfield fare against each other, and obviously Glentoran and Athlone as well. They'd be two ones to watch, I'd say, this week.
So DLR Crusaders, Pease at Linfield, Treaty, Shamrock Rovers, yep. Sligo against current champions Galway. That's all on the Saturday. Then on the Sunday, Shells are on the road there away to Cliftonville. Bows host Lisburn and Glentoran take on Athlone. It is a competition that everyone will still want to win. We've seen, yeah, even take for example Galway Cup win last year by winning this, and now at the moment, with the caveat being it's very early days, but they have a great start to the season, so yeah, it could be a driving point.
It gives them that kind of taste as well of success. You know, Galway have always, as I said, have been thereabouts. They just haven't had maybe, you know, the trophies to show for it. And this is just something else now, you know, that is available to go and prove a point. And, you know, obviously, given the fact that you're playing teams across the whole country now, it's fantastic to see, and it might be something for the future as well in terms of the leagues. You know, will they ever combine? Who knows? But
would you like to see that?
Why not? You know, I think as a league, we're always looking to grow the game. And, you know, we've gone from back in when I started with six, seven, eight teams, yeah, involved.
Some very Dublin focused as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was mainly Dublin. Some teams dropped away. Castlebar Celtic, you know, Rovers at the time fell away. And you're kind of just clawing back now. And thankfully, we're at 11. But if that was to increase again, you know, you're up to the 16s. And you could then maybe look at, you know, having two leagues where it's a tier system, you know, relegations, promotions, things like that as well. So it's definitely food for thought.
Here's hoping for further expansion of women's football. Rebecca Cray, thank you as always for popping into the studio. Great chat. And we're taking a short break. Then we are going to be previewing the Women's Six Nations a little bit later on. I'm going to be speaking to David Shanahan, Ireland's first full scholarship to American college football. Stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On Rugby.
Now, the Women's Six Nations kicks off this weekend, and I'm delighted to say that Alison Donnelly, founder of scrumqueens.com, the go-to place for all things women's rugby, is on the line. But before we chat to Alison, we're going to hear from Ireland's Adele McMahon, because Scott Beaman named his starting 15 for a very tough test, France away, an extremely tough way to open up Ireland's Six Nations campaign. In terms of team news, 19-year-old Kate Corrigan will make her Ireland debut against France in Saturday's Women's Six Nations opener, while Sevens players Bavin Parsons and Eve Higgins are in the starting 15. Adele McMahon will captain the side from the back row, as co-captain Sam Monaghan is continuing her return to play protocols. Nicole Foley starts at out half, marking her return to the championship for the first time since 2019. So, captain on the day, Adele McMahon, was speaking to our own Damien O'Mara.
Great mood around the place, it would seem, and like great positivity from the WXV3 and the Celtic Challenge, that, you know, a lot of game time under the belt and a lot of momentum perhaps going into the start of this championship.
Yeah, I was fortunate to play a game for the Clovers, made a campaign with Exeter Chiefs, so even just kind of seeing the confidence in those younger girls coming on, like Ivana, Kay Flannery, even the girls that maybe didn't make it, but like seeing where they have grown from a club game. So when I was back in Ireland, I actually think a few of them I used to coach in Feather, and I can't believe now I'm playing again with them and against them on a pitch. So that's been really rewarding for those girls to get game time, and then, you know, it's nice to have confidence from the WXV heading into Six Nations.
But that's so important for just the sense of cohesion and team building, that you've got extended time together rather than landing in and rushing into a test match.
Yeah, no, the majority of the squad have been together now for most of the Celtic Challenge, whether it be with Clovers, the Wolfhounds, so you can actually see some partnerships working a bit more smoother than others. Or you can tell who's playing Wolfhounds and who's playing Clovers together.
Yeah, listen, you're not going to shy away from the challenge of the two away games in particular, but those three matches at home, a real opportunity to put last year behind you. And listen, is it all about Rugby World Cup qualification as much as it is about the Six Nations Championship?
It really
table?
Is like that is our main focus and target for the Six Nations, is getting ourselves in a spot to be able to qualify, because there is a position up for grabs. So that's the first route we want to go for, and then putting ourselves in the best position should that be not reached. That's our main focus.
Are you a fan of moving the home games around? Because it gives that opportunity for people from Belfast who can't make it to Cork or vice versa, that you probably have three crowds who don't get a chance to see live rugby or live women's rugby all that much. You'll want to make plenty of noise and get behind you.
No, I actually love it, because the two campaigns that I was involved in, we had two in Virgin Media Park and then one up in Belfast. And like, I suppose my family down in Clare find Dublin very hard to get to at times, so a Cork fixture was quite easy and less daunting in the busy Dublin traffic. But I love the fact that we're bringing the game around the country, and more fans are getting access to watching our games.
Do you talk about expectations for the championship, or is it just that old mantra, one game at a time and see where it leads us?
Yeah, no, it definitely is a one game at a time, and like we're quite heavily focused on that opening game against France for the forefront, and we'll make sure that every week then we switch the focus to the next game. But we're also constantly challenging each other and learning, so yeah, one game at a time.
Is last year put to bed, or do you use it as motivation in a way to maybe show people the full capability of women's rugby in Ireland?
I don't think it's been something that we've spoke about, not in a bad way. The mood in camp has been completely different. Obviously I wasn't involved in that campaign last year, but from the outside, obviously support the girls quite heavily anyways. But with a fresh kind of look of staff and new training models put in, I feel like last year's, it is kind of to the side, if that makes sense. We've got a new fresh identity heading into the Six Nations, got a WXV that's given us confidence, but a reality check of the competition is going to be harder.
And even to look at training and to see John McKee out there, and then to see Scott Beaman, who's left a really successful England operation, to come here, it says an awful lot that people of that stature within rugby want to be a part of Irish women's rugby, and obviously see that there is untapped potential here to build on.
No, absolutely. Even from the young girls that are in, like a lot of them have good points of difference, and even though they're playing rugby might be a little bit short, but they're here because they deserve to be here, and the boys have spotted those talents. And so
are you envious of that in a way? Because the pathway that exists for young girls who want to play rugby from a very young age, and you know, girls who grew up seeing the teams of 13 and 15 win silverware are now probably out
there.
That
was me.
Well, there you go. But even like, you know, like you looked at that team with Fiona Coughlin and Lynn Cantwell and everything else, but presumably you were playing with a boys team, or were you even playing rugby at that stage?
No, I just picked up rugby when I was 19 in NUI, and I was like casually going to football training and accidentally landed in a rug pitch. You know, that was, I always think about that, like how fortunate I was that mistake happened for me, and I'm here representing Ireland as a captain. So it's just, you know,
but you must look now at the fact that there's girls who are in primary school around the country who are taking part in rugby camps, that their exposure to the game and the air miles they have by the time they reach 19 is, you know, it's a completely different generation coming through.
Like, jealous is the word for me. It's like, I'm just jealous about the skills that they could potentially have when they're 19, 20 years of age, whereas I was learning still how to pass the ball backwards. So from that point of view, like, it's encouraging to know that we're, you know, shining a light on women's rugby, and there's starting to be underage 10s, 12s, 14s, 16s, and girls getting exposure to that.
And is that why it's important? Like, it's so difficult for your team management to get you off the pitch after a game. So you're very conscious of the outlet that you represent for the next generation.
Yeah, we want to inspire people to play rugby. We want to inspire young girls to see that women's rugby deserves to be where it is, and women's sport deserves to have a light shine on them because of the growth that the women's game has. So, like, I suppose we're trying to be extra diligent and to prove our worth.
How big a benefit is it to have the Sevens girls back, and not even what they bring in terms of players within the squad, but what it says about where the 15s game is, that the IRFU are happy and encouraging that to happen in an Olympic year?
Yeah, like I said before, like having those girls come in after the off the back of winning their first gold title in a World Series is huge. Like they'll bring in massive momentum. They'll bring in like a winning way as such, or how to achieve that. And I think that pushes us. But it also has, we have quite good cohesion with some of those girls, like that have been in for the WXV campaign. And so I think it's only a positive for us.
So that was Ireland captain for this weekend, Adele McMahon. And as I mentioned, Ali Donnelly is on the line. Alison, thanks so much for taking the time to chat to us here on Game On. Let's just dive straight in. What is your reaction? What stands out to you from that Ireland 15 that was named today?
Yeah, look, I think it's a very exciting team, actually. I think undoubtedly Sam Monaghan's absence is a blow. But I think if she's on return to play protocol, best to have her back for the two home games coming in after this one. I'm very excited about our midfield. I think Eve Higgins is world-class, and her alongside Aoife O'Dolton, I think they're exciting, and that's one of the best midfields we've been able to name in a few years. Yeah, and look, we've got a very mobile pack. France in France, you said it there, you know, we've never won in France, and so this is going to be a tough game. But I feel some optimism about this Irish team. You know, new coach, winning momentum going into it, albeit, you know, from a fairly inferior competition. But it's when you look at the 15 and think, yeah, that's an exciting team.
Well, it can't get any worse from last year's really difficult campaign. And like, obviously there is that positivity around, there's good noise about infrastructure, around the setup now, the new coach that's in. Yes, we won the WXV 3 competition, probably expectedly as well. So what would Irish expectations be going into this campaign?
Yeah, look, last year was a disaster, right? There's no two ways around it. Finishing bottom, scoring very, very few tries and defending very poorly throughout. I think, you know, expectations this year are managed accordingly, right? So there's not huge pressure on Ireland going to France this weekend because nobody expects them to win. And in a way, that's a good place to start. I think the three home games this year is definitely in the pro kind of column. Those games are winnable games. Yes, we're a team who haven't beaten those teams over the last year, but they are winnable games. And I think, you know, if we put in a decent performance in France and come back with a bit of momentum on that front, Italy at home, winnable. Wales at home, winnable. So I think the expectation from my perspective would be to try and get a win in the bank. You know, two would be brilliant. Three might be a bit much after none last year, but getting a win, finding a shape to the team. You know, I don't know who Ireland were last year. We looked a bit shapeless, very flat, very disappointing. So let's see what this new coaching team are all about and, you know, the structure they want to put on things.
Would it be too ambitious and too quick to hope that Ireland might finish the best of the rest? And when I say best of the rest, assuming that France and England will be 1 and 2, or England and France in whatever order that is.
Look, I think given where we were a year ago, that would be a fairly spectacular return to push into third, because yes, we have improved. I have no doubt this will be a much better Irish team this year. You know, there's more infrastructure in the coaching setup. There's a new coach. They've won a few games. So they're going to be better, and they'll have learned a lot from last year. But all the other teams are getting better too. And, you know, this Women's Six Nations now is largely a professional competition where all of the players are contracted in one way or another, most of them. So, you know, they're all getting better too. So third, I think, would be spectacular. I don't expect that. Fourth, fifth, sixth, I think that's kind of where we're looking. Wales will be really interesting. You know, they played in WXV1 last year. Yes, they lost their games, but they just got that kind of, they're a year or two ahead of us on that journey, I think.
It's very difficult to know what style of play, what Ireland we will see in the Six Nations, but do you feel we do have the players there to be competitive, and the quality is there among not only this starting 15 for this weekend, but the squad and the group as a whole?
I do, but I think, you know, last year no one played to the best of their ability for a whole variety of reasons. So, you know, I think this year is a bit different though. So, you know, if you say, okay, we suddenly got, you know, Aveen Riley, Babyn Parsons and Eve Higgins back in there. Those are big additions to the team. Those are three very, very good players to add to the mix. So I think we do have the quality of players. Whether we have the depth over a six-game tour, a five-game tournament to kind of perform consistently, I don't know. We don't know yet. I think the biggest question mark over us, however, though, is, you know, the way we prepared for the competition was this kind of Celtic Challenge Cup competition, which really is a kind of second rate European kind of cross-border competition, where the Welsh and Scottish teams only put in players who, you know, weren't competing in the English Premiership. And last year, I think we did that and we were absolutely blown off the park when we went out and played Wales in round one. Presumably we'll have learned from that. And I think if you listen to Scott Beam in the last few weeks, he's been saying, look, we've learned and we've been really upping our intensity in training. But that's the big question mark. We do have the quality. Whether we have the prep and the kind of sustainability over five games, we don't know yet.
You mentioned a couple of the sevens players there that hopefully will be chasing Olympic sevens glory this summer. Unlike last year, Ireland, the 15 side, so Scott Beaman has the sevens players at his disposal. Were you surprised that those players are available? And also, how big of a boost will that be for Ireland?
I was surprised, yeah, because I think when they were excluded last year, you could kind of understand, look, we're trying to qualify for an Olympics here. And now I guess, you know, I think Ireland have a chance at an Olympic medal. And as you know, we don't win many of those. So I think I expected a bit more of a cotton wool approach. But look, at the same time, they have to play games. And I suspect, you know, we won't see all of them over the tournament because there is some crossover with seven World Series competitions. But it is a big boost because they're in a professional program playing very regularly on the world stage. Eve Higgins is, I mean, I'm such a big fan of her. She's a world-class outside centre. She's the player that if you go and talk to other teams, who are you excited about in the Ireland team, they'll say her. So I think she's a big boost. And she, you know, 2 years ago, people, nerds like me, maybe not everyone remembers this, but she performed very, very well in a big loss in France. So they are a boost because of the quality that they bring to the squad.
I know Sam Monaghan was up on media duty this week and she said the hurt will fuel the players. Do you feel that Ireland will have a monumental point to prove to themselves and will they back that up?
Yeah, I mean, last year I suspect they felt, you know, quite pained when they observed, one, what was happening on the field. You know, they didn't perform to their best of their ability, and two, the kind of the negative environment around them and the coverage and all the rest of it. So I guess teams have to be careful, don't they? That can't be their motivator, because that can kind of make you very emotional and get away from it. I'd be cautious about all of that, though, because, as I say, all the other teams are getting better. You know, Scotland are, you know, a team who were maybe where Ireland were a few years ago and are flying at the moment. You know, they won WXB2. They've won lots of games recently. A lot of their players are playing in very high-level club rugby. So I wouldn't get too carried away about how that will fuel Ireland. But if it's a factor in helping, then that's great.
As I read on scrumqueens.com, I should say, there have been all sorts of quite complex statements from World Rugby about how qualification for next year's expanded 16 World Cup will work. Put simply, the top five teams in this year's Six Nations will qualify for the World Cup. The sixth place team will play off against the European champions, likely Spain, and the winner of that game will also qualify. The loser will play in WXV3, where the top two teams will qualify. So there's a bit of a safety net here in the broader picture, Ali.
Yeah, look, you'd need a PhD in kind of permutations to work all that out. But I think what we're saying is guaranteed the third, whoever finishes third in the Six Nations goes to the World Cup. The others still have to wait for WXB fixtures to shake out. But it's barring a miracle, all of the Six Nations teams should get through at least the top five. So I think Ireland would want to be making sure that they finish at least in that top five and not bottom. And don't forget, you know, this is an expanded World Cup from 12 to 16 teams. So your chances are getting in. And I guess for us, you know, we didn't make the last World Cup, and I think that's very sore for a lot of the players, especially those players whose careers ended after that and they never got to play in one. So it would be brilliant if they finished third and they were certain, but I think, you know, fourth and fifth is fine. They should go through regardless.
Okay, well, here's hoping for a good performance against France this weekend. Obviously, we will be up against it. In terms of the other teams then, Ali, I'm right in saying England would be clear favourites to win their seventh title in a row.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, the last game is in France, which is exciting. I'm very excited about that game. I think, you know, I think that's the big kind of crescendo point. But England definitely favourites. And, you know, they've got a new coach as well in John Mitchell. So, you know, he's been talking a lot about kind of expanding the style of play. They tended over the last few years to be quite rigid. They still won all their games, but I'm excited to see that. I don't think anyone would relish playing an England team given more freedom, given how good they are. But look, let's hope France can take it all the way to the last day, because, you know, you need, like the men's Six Nations last week, you want a bit of jeopardy going into that last weekend.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And hopefully there is competitiveness across the board. So if England are favourites to win it, what's the kind of general gap here? Would it be England, France and then best of the rest, or would other teams be in contention?
Yeah, look, I think I don't think there's any team outside of those two in contention to win it. But I think last year we maybe saw a three-tier competition in England and France, you know, Wales, Scotland, Italy, and then us, sadly. I'd like to think this year it sort of reverts back to the traditional sense, which is those two teams are at the top and everyone's chasing them, and the rest of us are kind of battling it out for third. And, you know, look, one day we'll have a conversation about whether that's a healthy thing for a competition trying to grow. You know, it would be great if there were loads of contenders for the title, but I think we might be back this year to that more, that kind of regular pattern, which is that everyone's battling it out for third.
Okay, well, we will see how this transpires over the next few weeks. For now, Ali Donnelly, thanks so much for taking the call. Don't forget, of course, France-Ireland this weekend, live on RT2 and the RT Player. You can follow a live blog on the RT News app, or you can listen to live radio commentary on RTE Radio 1's Saturday Sport.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, with our Eye on America, I'm delighted to be joined by Georgia Tech punter and Kerry native David Shanahan, who is the first Irishman to earn a full scholarship to play American college football and will be entering his fourth season with the Yellow Jackets this year. David will be lining out in Dublin this summer for the 2024 Aer Lingus College Football Classic between Georgia Tech and Florida State University. Tickets for what is sure to be a great occasion on Saturday, August 24th are currently on sale on the Ticketmaster website. So, David, first and foremost, thank you very much for joining us on Game On this evening. You're in the off-season at the moment, although I know training doesn't fully stop, but are you getting to enjoy some downtime at the moment?
Yeah, thanks for having me. We don't get much of an off-season here. yeah, we're in kind of spring training now, so it's kind of weightlifting and running and a bit of practicing, but yeah, it's going well.
Okay, so an intense summer ahead, and obviously looking forward to this big match in the Aviva Stadium. I'm right in saying last year you were back yourself and some of your teammates, a bit of a mini tour of Ireland. Do you get back much? I'm assuming you're still keeping an eye on the Kerry footballers and everything else.
Yeah, we got back in July for a week, which was class. I got to bring some of the lads to my hometown in Castle Island, which was a lot of fun. I'll get home for about kind of 2 weeks in May. We get a couple of weeks off in May, so I'm looking forward to that.
And are you keeping an eye on Kerry at the moment?
I certainly am, yeah. The league campaign, I mean, league's kind of relevant anyways. It's about championship football then in Kerry, so the best is to come.
Listen, speaking of Gaelic football, three of the four Irish players hoping to secure NFL contracts have signed with a US-based sports agency. So Rory Began, Charlie Smith and former Connacht rugby player Darragh Leader have signed on with ProStar Sports in what could be a sign that they could soon be taken on by the NFL side. Have any of the lads, or did any of the lads, reach out to you before the combines and kind of pick your brains, obviously with that Irish connection there playing American football?
Not really. I just kind of saw clips of them online and stuff. But I mean, I know there's a couple of Irish lads like Jude McAtamney. He's a lad from Derry that was playing at Rutgers. And I spoke to Ross Bulger over at Idaho State. But yeah, no, I saw the lads at the combine. I got to watch kind of a couple of clips of it. But no, I think it's really class what they're doing. Really, really looking forward to seeing how it goes for them. For them.
You're in the thick of the sport. Like, you've played American football now. You're in your fourth year with Georgia Tech. From looking at those guys, having a bit more of an insight, having a bit more knowledge of the detail, do you feel they could forge a career in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely opportunity there. I mean, I always thought kind of, I'm obviously a punter, but I always thought kicking probably translates a little bit easier. I know a lot of those lads are goalkeepers as well. So it's a very similar motion kind of through the football. So I think there's definitely an opportunity, obviously with the international player pathway, that'll hopefully get onto a practice squad. And that's kind of like an extra year of kind of coaching and development as well. I know there's definitely, like, I know the Cowboys kicker, Brandon Aubrey, he didn't even play football in college. He played soccer. So there's definitely precedent there. So there's a lot of opportunity for sure.
And with the NFL teams having, isn't it, at least one international player starting from next season, so might we see more Irish players in particular explore the American football pathways?
Yeah, no, I think definitely. Obviously, the probably preferred route, obviously, maybe go through college, which kind of I've done and Jude has done and Ross Bulger's doing currently as well. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely opportunity. I mean, Australian lads have been kind of doing it for 10, 15 years. Pro League Australia was kind of who I went through down in Melbourne. They've been putting lads in college for kind of 15, 10 to 15 years. They've got lads in the NFL. Obviously, they're similar games, kind of AFL and Gaelic football, and obviously kind of rugby as well. So there's definitely a very translatable skill set there.
Mm. Talk to me about that. Obviously, you came through that pro kick Australia, as you mentioned, and perhaps not many Irish would be intent on exploring that kind of pathway. Like, how beneficial was that to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the reason I'm here. So I went down there. I was there for about kind of 9 months. So I was 18 when I moved down there. And it's basically it's two coaches. It's John Smith, who's an Englishman, and Nathan Chapman is an Australian. And they've all got kind of pro football experience. So it's kind of being in that environment where you're just kicking and working out every day. It's just such a really good environment to get better in. So that's definitely the reason I'm here. And then obviously they kind of put me in touch with Georgia Tech, and then kind of things flow from there. But yeah, I think there's actually three more young Irish lads that kind of moved over after me. And they're in it now. And Jude McAtamney, who's at Rutgers, he went through it. So they're definitely the reason I'm here.
What's been the main attraction to you for playing American football?
It was really the culture around college football was kind of what attracted me immediately. Just the fan nation and the whole scale of it. I mean, the stadiums are so big, and like in game days are such a big deal. That's kind of what attracted me immediately. I kind of started watching college football when I was about 15 or 16, and I just kind of got gripped by it, really.
Was it daunting initially?
Yeah, it definitely was. I remember the first time seeing the size of our stadium. Like, I couldn't believe how big it was. And then, like, we play away games in stadiums that are even bigger than ours, which, I mean, it was definitely took some getting used to. I think my freshman season was kind of, I definitely had moments. I wouldn't say I was overwhelmed, but I was definitely real nervous at times, but it's one of those things, the more you play, the more you get used to it, and it's just, once you get the experience of it all, it kind of gets a little bit easier every time.
Is it second nature to you now, considering the years that you've spent playing there?
I mean, it's definitely not second nature. It definitely takes a lot of preparation before you feel fully confident going into a game, but I think it's one of those things that you put in all the work and you kind of mentally prepare yourself for the game. You can go out there with confidence. And I suppose that's the biggest thing you can have on game day is confidence.
Let's come full circle for the final question. And how much are you relishing the opportunity packed out of Viva against Florida State, albeit a few months away?
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't wait for it, honestly. It's such a cool way to kick off my senior season. And I think the coolest thing is just getting, like, family and friends, they've got the opportunity to come and see me. I mean, a lot of my friends, like some of them have been over to see me. A lot of my family has as well. But kind of the sort of extended family and some more friends, it's hard to appreciate the scale of college football just when you're watching it on TV. So I'm looking forward to them getting to kind of experience it firsthand in real life. So I think that'll be a really cool aspect of it.
Well, listen, I hope it goes well. Not only that match, the season ahead, and your career ahead. No doubt we'll be chatting again, David. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks very much.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, just before we do leave you, some breaking news in the world of football. Leicester City have been charged by the Premier League with allegedly breaking spending rules during their last three seasons in the top flight. Leicester have been referred to an independent commission for breaching profit and sustainability rules and failing to submit audited finances. If found guilty, the Championship High Flyers could face a points deduction. The club are also subject to a separate financial probe by the English Football League. Leicester City said they are surprised and disappointed by the timing of the Premier League's actions when the club is not in the top flight. The club went on to say it would defend itself from any unlawful acts by the football authorities should they seek to exercise jurisdiction where they cannot do so. That is all we have time for on this evening's Game On. Maria is back with you at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Stay tuned to 2FM because the new music show is coming up with Better the Silva. But first, we're going to check in with the news desk.